It's an extraordinary moment for a sculptor when his work is finally revealed. In the days leading up to the event, you've worried about every inch of it. On and off for the duration of the job, and I was commissioned to make Mary Seacole's statue 7 years ago this month. My hopes and fears for the work have risen and fallen. But once it's unveiled, straight away, it's no longer yours alone. It becomes everybody's, and that's a wonderful moment. Of course, you don't make something like this on your own. I have many people to thank. I'll be as quick as I can with it. Far too many to thank, in fact, name each personally. But I do have to mention Pangolin Editions, the wonderful bronze foundry, which is my collaborator in everything I do. Members of the foundry came with me on the trip to Crimea, and my vision for the monument was only successfully realised because they were the people to cast and install it with me. Two of them, Steve Moore and Julian Wiseman, are here today. I owe them, Runway Kingdon, Claude Koenig and the whole team huge thanks. I must also thank Philomena Davidson, who steered me through the early stages, Daniel Evans, who assisted with the lettering inscriptions, and the many people at Guy's and St. Thomas's Trust, at the Florence Nightingale Museum, at Sir Robert McAlpine, at Shirelmi, and at Spears and Major, who brought their lustre to the many components of the work. Of course, my unbounded thanks go to all the patrons and ambassadors, and particularly to the trustees of the Mary Seacole Memorial Statue Appeal, who commissioned me to make this monument. People expect artists to be visionary, but I would use that same word to describe the best of commissioners too. This organization has indeed been visionary. Clive, Elizabeth, Roxanne, Juliet, Dawn, Steve, and all of you, I can't name all the trustees. I cannot tell you how privileged I have felt to have been asked to make this monument and how much I've admired your resilience over many years in bringing us to this proud day. It's been an enormous pleasure working with you. Several years ago, shortly after I was commissioned, I spoke to my brother James about the project. And he then asked his school-aged daughter what, if anything, she remembered from history lessons about the Crimean War. After a little head-scratching, she replied that she could recall only one event, and it was known as the Charge of the Nightingales. Well, this project has endured its own Charge of the Nightingales, as some of you may know. Shame on them. Mary Seacole was a remarkable, unique, brilliant, and indomitable figure. All her endeavours were steered towards creating opportunities for her to care for the sick and wounded. For me, she stands as a figurehead for all those who've come from foreign countries or who've been born here into minority ethnic groups and have chosen to work as nurses in our health service. The words from her autobiography, which we've inscribed on the plinth, it applies as much to them as to her. Wherever the need arises, on whatever distant shore, I ask no higher or greater privilege than to minister to it. In the early days of the project, I wanted to find an eloquent way of expressing Mary's story. It seemed to me that if I outlined her against a cast impression of the stony ground in Crimea, I would simultaneously be placing her within her own history and against a symbolic image of the cold stone walling which is at the cruel heart of the racial prejudice she had to endure. When we arrived in Crimea and found the original site of her establishment, what was most evident was that this dusty ground had been a battlefield over many centuries. The ground was littered with decades-old rusting shrapnel. The quarry face, now reproduced in bronze behind her statue, and only a couple of hundred yards from where she set up her base, carried the detonation mark of an exploding shell. This you will see in a few moments. It's almost 3 years since we were there, and in that time, Crimea has yet again been the target of foreign aggression. Mary was a battlefield nurse, and we have silhouetted her against her battlefield. That metaphor for this first monument in Britain to a named black woman continues, sadly, to seem appropriate. Heartbreakingly, the aptness of the symbol could scarcely have been more emphasized than in the last few febrile days, when in place of the open-minded, multicultural, inclusive, and tolerant country that we imagined increasingly was within our grasp, the unspeakable has come to be spoken on our streets, and contempt and fear have discolored the small change of our public discourse. But come and visit this site after sunset one evening soon. You will see the statue of Mary illuminated by the spotlight here on the ground in front of her. It throws her shadow onto the bright disc behind. As you look across the river then, you will see the Palace of Westminster recede into darkness until only the lambent moon of the clock face hangs suspended in the sky. From there, a path of glittering light stretches across the river towards this spot. That moon on the other bank, the Eye of Westminster, finds its mirror here in Mary Seacole's illuminated disc. I like to think that while the monument is seen, it also watches. And perhaps what it says is this: let not those things for which Mary Seacole stood, those virtues shining like a lamp across the water, her courage and resolve, her compassion, energy, and generosity in the face of all the prejudice and hostility that she and others through the ages have endured, be dimmed in the days and years ahead. In the darkness of the night, we find our way because it is illuminated by the sky's numberless stars, each one unique, of differing hue, radiant and blessed.